We're going to look at Mark chapter 8 this morning, and I'm going to try to pay attention to the way colors work on the projector. Sometimes colors are great, sometimes colors are bad. Please feel free to let me know if something isn't working. Back when I was at a church that got its first projector, PowerPoint was still pretty young, and the preacher was so excited. He said, make sure you let me know. I'm getting used to it. If something doesn't work, just let me know. And he hit on and started preaching. Didn't notice that everyone gasped because of the intensity of the color green that he was kind of burning into our eyes. It was a really exciting morning. So I've stayed away from green ever since then. I want to look at a story in Mark chapter 8. There's a lot to read through. I want to get all the way through verse 26. And so that's just a bunch to get through. And so I'm going to try to keep my comments on some of the leading material, keep those comments short so that we can get to what I'm looking at. But I want us to think about the idea. We all understand that there should not be any fence riding. You know, either you love God or you don't love God. That's one of the great teachings that Jesus gives us. You cannot serve God and mammon is one of his examples that he gives. And you can't serve God and fill in the blank is really what Jesus is getting at. And while that is obvious, it's in the Bible, which means it's an idea that no matter how obvious it is, and if it's in the Sermon on the Mount, no matter how obvious, it must be something that's not always easy to determine or to discern when we are acting and behaving. And then you get the idea of someone, well, okay, I do love God. I want to be committed to Christ. A person commits themselves to Christ. Now what? I've done it. I don't serve mammon. I serve God. And then you find out that you have, you know, another at least 25 minutes of your life, probably 25 years or possibly 52 years. You got a long life in which to be committed to God, and that's going to look different as life continues and your life looks different. In Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 12, I mentioned this in the Bible class. It was probably on my mind because the thought I had for this lesson. There were people who needed to become teachers. You ought to be at a certain level, and you're not at that level. Well, I committed myself to Christ. Well, I think one of the points there is that growth is part of that commitment. And that's one of the ideas that I want to look at in these stories, that disciples are following learners, and you know it's a big deal to start following Christ. Once you get into the habit of following Christ, it's easy to forget that you need to also be a learner. And that's what I want to look at today. So in Mark chapter 8, verses 1 through 10, we see Jesus having compassion again for the crowds. In those days, when again a great crowd had gathered and they had nothing to eat, he called his disciples to him and said to them, I have compassion on the crowd, because they have been with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on the way. And some of them have come from far away. And his disciples answered him, how can one feed these people with bread here in this desolate place? And he asked them, how many loaves do you have? They said, seven. And he directed the crowds to sit down on the ground, and he took seven loaves, and having given thanks, he broke them and gave them to the disciples to set before the people. And they set them before the crowd, and they had a few small fish, and having blessed them, he said that these also should be set before them. And they ate and were satisfied, and they took up the broken pieces left over, seven baskets full, and there were about 4,000 people. And he sent them away, and immediately he got into the boat with his disciples and went to the district of Dalmanutha. Apparently, if you only feed 4,000 people, the story isn't that exciting. This is the one that we often forget. Well, the feeding of the 5,000 is more repeated, and so that's the story that we gravitate to. But again, we have Jesus here. He has compassion. He has compassion for their needs and for their journey. I think that this is kind of a neat idea. He sees their need right there in the day, in the immediate, but also the trip home. He doesn't want them to pass out on the way home. And it just struck me that he is recognizing their day, their moment, their right here and now kind of a need, but he's also looking for the need that they're going to have as they continue on in their life, which is a theme that I started noticing in this. I love their question in verse 4, how can one feed these people with bread here in this desolate place? How indeed? The feeding of the 5,000 has already happened. So I don't know if that question was the polite cough, cough, O Lord, you know, or if it was an absolute ignorance having seen Jesus figure out this problem before. I don't know what that question is, but it's an odd question either way. How can anyone feed all these people? It's just an interesting moment. But Jesus sees their needs, and he satisfies them. People can be satisfied. Now, these are people who made a big sacrifice. They their whole weekend, I don't know if it was the weekend, but 3 days. They spent a long weekend with Jesus, and they didn't have anything left, and they didn't have enough to get home. You know, this was a sacrifice on their part, and Jesus has compassion for these people who sacrificed for him. Then the next story in verses 11 through 13 is about the Pharisees. The Pharisees came and began to argue with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him. And he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, why does this generation seek a sign? Truly I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation. And he left them and got into the boat again and went to the other side. What were the Pharisees thinking about? What were the Pharisees doing? They didn't come sacrificing of themselves to spend 3 days listening to Jesus. They came to argue, and they came asking for a sign so that they could test him. They came to argue, and they came to test. They're not coming to listen. They're coming to argue. If you come to argue, you are coming to yell, right? You're not coming to learn. You are coming to fight. That's the point. Discussions can get heated, right? So things can go in a certain direction. But if they came to argue, they didn't come to learn. They came to put Jesus in his place. They wanted a miracle not to be fed even for the sake of the physical reason of wanting food. They came for the physical reason of wanting to be awesome and cool. I mean, they're still feeding their passions, right? The Pharisees come not to sacrifice, but to destroy what they saw. In James 4, verse 3, you ask and you do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. They're asking for a miracle, and they don't get it. And Jesus has said, no sign to this generation. But they'll see a sign, won't they? They've seen, if they wanted to, they could have seen it. He's speaking this principle. You ain't getting it. These people are not going to get it. And in James 4, he has that statement, you're asking to spend it on your passions. And often when we think of the word passions, and some translations use the word lusts there in James 4, 3, we're thinking just, you know, those deep down base carnal, just this looking at stuff you shouldn't look at on the internet, watching the wrong kind of movies, going to those wrong kind of places. But it's also the word is just pleasure and the desire for pleasure. And the desire here that they had for pleasure was the desire to be better than somebody else. To finally put Jesus in his place and to show that they are cool. That's just pride. That's the same kind of thing. Well, I would never go to such and such a place, but I surely know how to put someone in their place. Those are both feeding our passions and desires. And so here at the beginning, we have kind of this baseline. People who are sacrificing to be with Jesus, and then people who are just arguing with him. You know, in a lot of ways, it's kind of these extremes. And when Jesus is with the people who are willing to sacrifice to be with him, he has compassion with them. And when Jesus is with the people who only come up to argue and to fight, he sighs deeply. And, you know, this is not, you know, the falling in love sigh, right? This is the sigh that when the child does the thing that's so crazy, the parent doesn't have words. God forbid I ever make Jesus sigh like that, right? I'm sure I've done it. What does it take? What do I have to do to make Jesus look at me and just, oh, and You know, the phrase, I have no words. Well, he had no miracles for them, but I have no words. So these guys were blinded. They wanted things, and they expected things, and they were going to feed themselves. We're going to get to a story of a man who's blind. And I'm trying to find these people that, though they see, they are blind, right? And so we have kind of this baseline of people who are making sacrifices to be with God and people who are wanting to destroy God in order to be with God. And this sort of a situation. And we need to see these extremes. And you know, usually we say, well, you should be somewhere in the middle. I don't think you want to be in the middle of this. We don't want to be half Pharisee and half crowd. We want to be the crowds. We don't know anything bad about the crowds in this story, right? They came to Jesus. They made the sacrifice to be there. And Jesus fed them. And he gave them food, right? And so we need to not just think that we can play around somewhere in the middle. Now, after this is where the story becomes a little interesting to me. We've heard about Jesus feeding people, and we've seen Jesus upset and frustrated with the Pharisees. And so now, in 14 through 21, Jesus teaches the people. And we're only going to read the first two verses here. So they got in the boat to go to the other side. Now, they had forgotten to bring bread. They had only one loaf with them in the boat, and he cautioned them, saying, "Watch out! Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." I think Jesus has just taken the stuff that was right there in front of him, and he's taken the stuff of the right now to talk about the stuff of the bigger than right now, right? The stuff of that day to talk about the things of life. If they had just come from a football game where they yelled at the Pharisees, he might have had a football example, right? He's using the things of the day to talk about the things of life. You know, what was Jesus thinking about? What do you think Jesus was thinking about? Was he thinking about loaves of bread? Was he thinking, man, this is white and I prefer wheat? Man, I wish it was sourdough. I wish it was rolls instead of loaves, right? That's not the stuff that Jesus is thinking about. I see two things that he could be thinking about anything, right? I see two things he could be thinking about. He can be thinking about the people who sacrificed to come and be with him and who needed him and whom he could supply and take care of. And in contrast with that, the knuckleheads that are coming up to fight with him. Those are the things that I can imagine him thinking about, the crowds and the Pharisees. And so that's probably what's on his mind, at which point he says, "Watch out for the Pharisees' leaven." In verses 16, I'll start 14 again. Now they had forgotten to bring bread, and they had only one loaf with them in the boat. And he cautioned them, saying, "Watch out, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." And they began discussing with one another the fact that they had no bread. Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember? When I broke the five loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up?" And they said to him, 12. "And the seven for the 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up?" And they said to him, 7. And he said to them, "Do you not yet understand?" You know, we get that detail. They had only one loaf. And Jesus says, "Watch out! Watch out for that scary leaven." And they start saying,
"What's he talking about?"
I mean, it's so easy to make fun of the Pharisees, and sometimes it's so easy to make fun of the apostles, but this is just bad. What are the disciples thinking about? They're not thinking about his power, clearly. And they're not thinking about his frustration that he just left. These are not because the bread is literally connected to his power. It was part of the power bread, right? I can make more bread. And he didn't just say, "Watch out for the leaven," and hoped they guessed that he's talking about the Pharisees. He said, "Watch out for the leaven of the Pharisees and that of Herod." So he's literally talking about the two experiences that we just read about. It looks like it's the same day. same couple days. They're not thinking about where they just were, right? They're thinking about food, a lot like those Israelites. Man, Egyptian leeks are the best. Let's go back to slavery, right? That's just what it sounds like to me. Oh, it was so great back then. Oh, all this free food that God keeps bringing us. You know, just so vapid. To me, they're blinded by their fruitlessness here. It's just such a vapid moment. And so I think it might have been John Folk pointed out that the moment there in 19 and 20 when he asks them the question they answer, I didn't read it this way because I didn't want to kind of give it away, but this is the, I always hear this in the voice of the teenager. How many was left over when you picked it up? And they looked down at their foot and they 12. Well, how many were the second time? Oh, 7. You know, just like you don't even want to admit it because it's that embarrassing. You know, and a 2-year-old, oh, they're 12, because they're not getting the idea that they're in trouble, that they're being foolish, but they're old enough to know better. And I have this image of this posture that they're just so ashamed of themselves, hopefully ashamed of themselves. And he's saying, don't you understand? And so this is what's going on when we get the miracle that for the longest time to me didn't make sense. This is Jesus healing a blind man, not poking him in the eye. Although, I do like this picture because it looks like that's what he's doing. Mark 8, starting in 22. They came to Bethsaida, and some people brought to him a blind man and begged him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had spit on his eyes and laid his hand on him, he said, "Do you see anything?" And he looked up and said, "I see people, but they look like trees walking." And Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again, and he opened his eyes. His sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly, and he sent him to his home, saying, "Do not even enter the village." This story has always been odd to me, because why couldn't Jesus heal him? You know, is there something wrong? There's that... The account about how when Jesus went back to his hometown, he wasn't able to do mighty works there. But I don't think that his miracle skills failed, but because the people there were not the receptive people. So it's not like Jesus tried to do a miracle and, oops, I made a mistake. There's got to be some sort of reasoning here. And then the other one is, how does the blind guy know that the people are people and that they look like trees and that they look like trees walking? Maybe he hadn't been blind his whole life. I also think that the blind man statement is one of the funniest in the Bible. They look like trees walking. How would you know? But this is, someone explained this to me. Simon Harris gave me an explanation that I think works. I don't think it's Jesus is frustrated with the Pharisees and then he's frustrated with his own guys and when he comes to this town he makes a mistake. I think this is teaching one of the lessons that was needed to be understood by the people he was there with. Now, here's one idea to think about. If you could give a blind person blurry vision, wouldn't you be a hero? Like somebody's invented, and they've been developing the cochlear implants, right? So that the deaf can have something that plugs into their head, and they can hear. And they can hear for the first time. And if you've ever heard what they hear, it doesn't sound good. It's rough, it's scratchy, but it's something. And it's a miracle. It's not a miracle, it's just, you know, but it's okay to say that. It's a miracle that they can hear anything. And so if you invented glasses that they could wear and it would plug into their heads and they could see blurry tree people, you would be a hero and we would all be excited and the blind would all be excited. And that's just the reality, right? Blurry vision is good enough when you're blind, unless you're standing with Jesus. If Jesus only heals the guy halfway, we're all going, "What's your problem, Jesus? What's the deal? What's wrong here?" Because that's not what Jesus does. And I don't know, you know, if I was a blind man, I go, Excuse me, Jesus, it's only halfway. Should I be humble and accept the gift that I've received? Or should I be bold and say, I want to be fully, fully healed? I want to be made whole. Well, unfortunately, I'm arguing that we ought to ask to be made fully whole. I don't know if I was literally standing there, if I'd have the nerve to ask that much. But that's really what this point here. If Jesus is offering complete vision, are you going to be satisfied with the blurry trees walking around? Right? That is what Jesus offers. And on the one extreme that we saw at the beginning of this chapter, the people are sacrificing what they have and what they can do and everything about them to be near Jesus, to hear Jesus, and to learn from Jesus. And then the Pharisees, they're not making sacrifices. They're coming on the attack. It's almost like they want to sacrifice Jesus, which is what they end up doing, right? They want to not give of themselves, but take of him so that they can be better. They want to destroy what they find. Oh, that's terribly wicked. We would never want to be that. And then we get the apostles. And what are they doing? What are they doing? We need to make sure that we don't just settle for this half vision. Worldly wisdom is only going to take us so far. Worldly wisdom will get you pretty far. You can have a decent life. But worldly wisdom is not complete and it is not full. Worldly success only reaches so far. It reaches, if you get enough worldly success, it will reach to the grave. But it won't reach into the grave, will it? The victory we have in Christ reaches past the grave. And so what do we want? Kind of like halfway? What are we going to settle for? Just a little bit of Jesus? And I think he's trying to drive them forward. And I want to take my time and look through all the verses here where Jesus is fussing at his apostles. Jesus, aware of this, when they're saying, what bread's he talking about? He says, why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? I love this question, why? Because
because we don't have any bread, and you're talking about bread,
right? Like, there's no good answer here. When you ask someone why, when you ask someone who isn't a fool, okay, when you ask someone who isn't a child why, you are forcing them to slow down and consider their actions, consider their behavior, and try to explain what they did. When you ask a little child why, very often they will give you a literal answer. Why did you hit that? I wanted to see what it sounded like. Why did you break that? I wanted to see if it was break. Yeah, that's because it's a kid. I had a friend who came home, his two sons, they had one of those two-person saws, one son's on one side, one son's on the other side, and they're going back and forth, and they're trying to go through the hood of his car. And if you ask them, why are you doing this? The answer is, we wanted to see if we could, you know, make it work. I mean, like, what a dumb question. But if you ask a couple of adults doing that, and they wake up to the reality of what are we doing, it really highlights a person's foolishness. Because if you can't explain your behavior, if you cannot articulate it, well, it might be because you haven't thought it through well, but if you take the time to start thinking through, why am I doing this? Why am I thinking a certain way? Why am I talking about the fact that we have no bread, right? It might point out that you are simply being impulsive. That there is no real explanation for what you're doing other than I have passions and desires and I just feed them when I feel them, which means that you are childish. Jesus wants us to be childlike, not childish. He wants us to understand. And so we really ought to ask ourselves why a lot of the time. Why am I doing this? Why am I stressed about this? Why do I feel this anxiety today? Why am I letting their anxiety invade me and affect me today? Why am I doing this thing or why am I not doing this thing or why am I reacting to their... There's a lot of things going on. And we need to take the time to think about what we're doing. Jesus stops them. Why are you talking about this? Do you not perceive or understand? These are neat words. The definition, the first word in the definition of perceive in the Bible is perceive with the mind. Not very helpful. To perceive, to have understanding, to think upon, to heed, and to ponder. So the first word is just kind of thinking about and meditating for understanding. And then the understand word, which is just a total synonym, to put together the perception with the thing, the putting it together in your mind. And so you're thinking about it and you're connecting it to other things. Do you not perceive and understand? Don't you have an ability to figure out what I'm talking about? They've been walking around and delighting in the fruits, literally eating the fruits of God incarnate, and they're thinking about their belly. Like in Philippians, I think it's chapter 3, their God is their belly. They're still thinking about their belly. They're still thinking about the stuff of the day, rather than when Jesus is talking about things of the day, watch out for the leaven of the Pharisees. You know, I've learned that he's usually not talking about today. He's talking about life. And so there they are, day in and day out with Jesus, and they're not working on these things. Solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment. Do you have any power of discernment? Of course you do. Everybody has some. Even those who have very little have some. So you have the power, the ability to discern. We were talking even about the word to judge, like discernment and judgment is connected together. The powers of discernment trained by constant practice, right? That constant use trains and hones it in. Why is it that everyone gets in a car crash on the first snow and not on the 100th snow? It's because the first time we forgot how to drive all of a sudden in the last year. But by the end of the winter, we can spin around in a circle and keep going in a straight line, and who cares about the snow, right? It's because we've had that practice. We remember after day one, I need to slow down. I need to start worrying, thinking about, I should start braking a little bit earlier. All these little ideas that we remember and we start working on, right? Powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. Because the Bible doesn't lay everything out. My favorite example is methamphetamines. I don't know. Is crack cocaine good or bad? Jesus didn't say. He didn't have to. Because if I am able to discern things and I have practice with reading the Bible and applying it to these very simple concepts, and somebody introduces some brand new powerful drug, I will have a pretty good answer. Now, I might just be shooting from the hip, and I ought to take the time to think about it maybe a little bit later on, right? But if you've been working on this for a while and have good practice at it, very often shooting from the hip will be the right answer. Trying to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. What are the things that God likes? Well, It doesn't mention what music Jesus listened to. Well, can you figure out what music he wouldn't like today? Right? Maybe that's the direction that we need to go in. And this is what, don't you guys get it? Is what he's asking them. Don't you perceive? Don't you understand? If we put in the work and keep putting in the work, we'll get better and better at seeing issues that are gray and knowing whether they're black or white, right? Oh, this is a gray topic. Okay, let me look at that. All right, I understand that's a gray issue. That's a complicated issue, but I have a pretty good idea about what I need to do. I'm not patting myself on the back. It's just the more I read the Bible, the more I listen to my brothers and sisters, the more I'm able to look at something and go, well, that's wrong. Or at the very least, that's too close to the wrong, and I'm not going to go there. And we get better at that over time. Or, you know, we sit in the boat with Jesus not paying attention. Are your hearts hardened? Often we think of the word sin and guilt with the hard heart idea. But the word, the definition in this sense, has more to do with calloused and dull. Sometimes the Old Testament, maybe even in the New Testament, talks about how they've grown fat. And there's just this callous and there's this fat around them and they just can't even do it and they're not thinking about it and they're not working on it. And this is what we need to get away from. Pharaoh's hardness grew from initially, well, who is the Lord that I should honor him? That ignorance. Well, the more that God showed him who he was, the more Pharaoh didn't like it and And his heart kept being hardened there. And that's a good demonstration of the same sun that hardens the clay, melts the butter. In that parable, you get to choose if you're going to be clay or butter. Clay doesn't get to choose, but you do. So what are you going to choose? These disciples in the boat, they weren't hardened to sinful ugliness. I'm not going to say that. But they sure were hardened to the point where they didn't understand. And I think that's bad enough. So, they were just calloused to understanding. I want to take the time to look at Ephesians 4. I think this passage is really good at illustrating this. And it also illustrates a side point that I want to reintroduce here. So in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 17 through 24, he says, "Don't be like the bad guys." And now he's going to give us a good description of the bad guys. 17 through 24. "Now this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. They're darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardness of heart, their hardness of heart. They have become callous and have given themselves up to sensuality, greedy to practice every kind of impurity. But that's not the way you learned Christ, assuming that you have heard about him and were taught in him as the truth is in Jesus, to put off your old self, which corrupts you, which belongs to your former manner of life and is corrupt through deceitful desires, and to be renewed in the spirit of your minds and put on the new self created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness." This is not a paragraph that says, see how bad the bad guys are. He says, you are not supposed to be like that anymore. And that's not what you've learned, if in fact you've learned it at all. And he's turning it right back at them, saying, are you calloused in your mind? Think about this. You should be renewing your mind. I don't know if we get baptized the one time, but I think the renewal is a constant renewal and this constant growth up towards God. And Paul is challenging them. Have you actually done this? Have you continued to do this? Or are you kind of going into this darkened understanding? So we need to be careful about that. Can you imagine walking around with Jesus every day and liking every word he said? I'm a human. I hope you are too. And I am pretty sure that eventually I go, here he goes again. He's always saying something about something. Right? That's because Jesus was also a human person. He's God, but he was a human person. And when you are around people, eventually you kind of get used to it. I do treat parts of the Bible that way. I don't know what to do with every list in the Bible. I don't know what to do with all the times in Chronicles when it's saying every person who sang a song in the temple. And I go, here we go again. Here's that section. And so I can sympathize with, well, Jesus is saying something in the boat again, and I don't understand what he's ever saying. But that shouldn't be where we sit. That shouldn't be where we reside. Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? Whether in a boat or in a pew, we need to be growing and listening and thinking and working on these things. God gave us eyes and ears, but if we don't use them, what are we doing? God gave us a mind to understand, but if we don't use it, what are we doing? We're to be children of the light, it says in 1 Thessalonians 5. Okay, I'm child of the light. And then he says, wake up and be sober. Oh, well, I don't like mornings, That's not the reaction that we're supposed to be giving out. We need to be awake. So then let us not sleep as others do, but let us keep awake and be sober and work and grow. If we see a brother who is living well, are we imitating him? That's one of the commands that we get in Hebrews chapter 13. I love this. Consider the outcome of their way of life, talking specifically about the leaders. But one of the advantages of having a good leader is you can see, wow, they've dealt with stuff, or they have good answers for things, and I can copy them and have a good life. But if I'm looking at people around me that are doing well and doing things the right way, younger or older, and I just ignore that and live my life because I want to do what I want to do, well, I'm not living up to the challenge. I'm not living up to the call that God gave us. We have a similar idea. When you see a brother in need and you don't serve him, right? Faith without works. One of the works is to sit and think about God's word. I mean, one of the works is getting up and taking a meal. And another one of the works, and one of the other things that we need to do, is to get up and think about what God says. Otherwise, we're just like the fool who built his house on the sand. We need to meditate. We need to think about what God has told us. See how that connects to our life. Go back to the word. See if we made a mistake. Find something new. Find something different. Find two things that you never knew that you could put together and see how they work together and you grow in that. That great, don't you understand? How many baskets? 12. How many baskets? 7. Don't you understand? Makes me think of this great moment. On that day, many will say, Lord, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name and cast our demons in your name? Cast our demons out. I don't think they had any of their own demons. Cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name. And those were lawless people. Those were people who didn't know the law, didn't understand and didn't perceive and didn't abide in the law. And for some reason, when I read this account here of these apostles, it just sounds like that's kind of where they are. I mean, maybe only for 5 minutes. You know, I'm not saying they're going downhill and they're done. But like that's where they are when Jesus is saying, watch out for the leaven of the Pharisees. And they say, did you bring another loaf? What's he talking about? We didn't get this from the Pharisees. This is miracle bread. What's he talking about? And he's just frustrated with them. They do pretty well. Back in chapter 8, in verse 27, Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea Philippi, and on the way he asked his disciples, who do people say that I am? And they told him, John the Baptist, and others say Elijah, and others, one of the prophets. And he asked them, but who do you say that I am? Peter answered him, you are the Christ. And he strictly charged them to tell no one about him. And this is the middle of Mark. This is where the book changes. And they made that change. Well, Jesus is the one who makes the change. But they made the change to be a part of that. They went from, what's he talking about bread? To, you are the Christ. That's a big jump. So they were able to do it. We are able to do it. I think it's important for us to remember, Jesus has compassion for us, right? Here is a bunch of people. And they're making all these sacrifices. And they didn't have any food. And what are they going to do? And Jesus just gives them food. He just, here's food. Now, he did that with the 5,000. The next day, they're coming up and they're wanting food. And he's like, I'm not going to give you guys any food. But he does in this story. Is it because Jesus is fickle and he can't make up his mind? Or is it because he looks at people and helps them, right? And so when he is so frustrated with the apostles in that boat, he doesn't dump them out. He lets them live up to that next moment where they say, you are the Christ. And so if Jesus is offering to heal you, how much healing are you going to ask for or submit to or work with? If Jesus is offering you a meal, how much are you going to eat? Because the reality is God does, he offers us a feast. We have a feast. He set us in a wide place. It's a level place. It's secure. He is our tent above us. You know, he is our rock, our foundation. He's all these things. Are we going to take advantage of that? Are we going to step up to the plate? You know, are we going to step up to that next level? Are we going to continue to work and learn and think? Let's close by looking at Psalm 49. Psalm 49 is, you know, it's not what this lesson was about. But I kept thinking about this in Psalm 49, and Psalm 49 is written to be a teaching psalm, and it's teaching a lesson. And it struck me that it's not teaching the small lesson that's found in it. It's using that, kind of like using a parable, to teach a bigger idea. We'll read Psalm 49 to encourage us to keep working at these things. Hear this, all you peoples, give ear, all you inhabitants of the world, both low and high, rich and poor together. My mouth shall speak wisdom, and the meditation of my heart shall be of understanding. I will incline my ear to a parable. I will open my dark sayings upon the harp. And here's the lesson. Wherefore should I fear in the days of evil when iniquity at my heels compasses me about? Why would I ever be afraid? And now he gives us, it seems like almost a parable, a little example. They that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him, for the redemption of their soul is costly and must be let alone forever. That should still live always, that he should not see corruption. For he sees that the wise men die, the fool and the brutish together perish, and leave their wealth to others. Their inward thought is that their houses shall continue forever, and that their dwelling places to all generations, and they call their lands after their own names. But man abides not in honor. He is like the beasts that perish. Their way is their folly, yet after them men approve of their sayings. They are appointed as a flock for Sheol. Death shall be their shepherd, and the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. And this their beauty shall be for Sheol to consume, that there be no more habitation for it. But God will redeem my soul from the power of Sheol, for he shall receive me. Be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dies, he shall carry nothing away. His glory shall not descend after him, though while he lived, he blessed his soul. And men praise thee when thou doest well to thyself. He shall go to the generation of his fathers, and they shall never see the light. Man that is in honor and understands not is like the beasts that perish. This is speaking about more than those who rely on wealth. It's using that as this example. But are you using something to be content? Are you using something to be safe? Are you, you know, is there something that you have that is making sure that you can be happy and feel content about yourself and think that you're okay? You know, some people use showing up at church just enough to make sure that their conscience feels okay. You know, that's kind of a silly example, but it's there. The man that is in honor and understands not is like the beasts that perish. The only way that we're going to survive this life is by trusting in God. And he has given us the healing to be whole, and he has given us the food to feed us completely so that we are satisfied. And are we going to be lazy about it? I hope not. My prayer is that we will follow after Christ, that we will continue reading and learning and listening and meditating, not just reading, but meditating and thinking about what we learn. Taking the time every once in a while to ask ourselves, why? Why am I thinking this way? Why am I acting this way? So that Jesus doesn't come down and shame us with that question. So that we can be prepared for him. Trusting in him more and more and more. I don't know what your heart is like at the moment. I don't know what your spiritual needs are at the moment. But you do. God definitely does. Not be trying to hide it from everybody else. But God knows. We're here to pray with you. We're here to pray for you. Even if you need to commit yourself to Christ in the waters of baptism, we're here for you. But just remember that all the tricks that we have on this earth are done at the grave. Every dollar we save is done at the grave. And the only thing that's going to see us past that is the Lord. So if there's anyone who needs help and prayers at this time, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing.